The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Young lady who got a foul ball on Mother's Day earlier on has not gotten the result she wanted. The Sox have, though, in the air, center field. Charlie Tilson for out number three, and the Sox close out the Blue Jays 2-1 in the series. Final score goes 5-1 in this game.
Middays on the Score.
Top of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz and the 17th-ranked Cats this fall at Ryan Field. Matchups include Ohio State, Michigan State, and Iowa. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. White Sox playing pretty well. They merit some attention.
15-13 over their last 28. They've had a little better pitching. Charlie Tilson has been fun to watch.
Well, fun to watch yesterday for a weird reason.
Yeah.
That's not one you see every day.
No.
I've completely misread it. I'm way too far back. I'm just going to kind of fall over and catch it.
Just to go over that way. That's what Kyle Schwarber was trying to do last night when he got spun around by that thing. Did not end up well. Schwarber is so much better defensively than I ever thought he'd be. He still has a way of making things look adventurous like Charlie Tilson did. No, but there's been a handful of guys. Did you see Tim Anderson over his last five? Struggled a little bit for about eight. His last five, he's been terrific. 333, 368, 667. Had the three-run shot. Didn't bat flip because he heard Rick Renate run. So he just ran.
Run,
instead.
Dumbass!
I found that interesting. Yep. He's going against the Blue Jays, which have had his arch nemesis in Marcus Stroman there for a little while. And Randall Grichuk, his Twitter beef right there for you. Interesting decision by Tim, but he hit the dinger. Nice little five-game stretch.
Not getting cheated on these either. I mean, his home runs, he is out in front of the plate. Matthew Trueblood of Baseball Prospectus actually noted this, how the fashion in baseball that for so long has been the whole Frank Thomas idea of erase the back line of the batter's box, gain an advantage by getting as far back as you can. What have we talked about with what we are seeing with contact point of where people are trying to hit the ball? We talked to Ron Coomer about it, about how this idea now, get out and get it. Launch angle, contact point in front of the plate. Tim Anderson's way up in the box.
His front foot is pretty much to the front line of the batter's box. And actually, that's something that I thought Alex Rodriguez and Christian Yelich did well on the broadcast yesterday. They kind of talking about where he was going to get the ball. It was in the one-on-one, something they taped in spring training. But it's a good piece of baseball conversation here. As stuff breaks, as pitchers throw more and more breaking balls and more counts and are going away from the fastball as often as ever before, breaking stuff breaks late. If you could get it before it does that real nasty turn, maybe you've got a better chance and maybe you can find harder contact.
Go into the torpedo before it arms itself.
Maybe that's
what it is. It is Marco Ramius hitting
some
theory
in
right there.
Don't react well to bullets.
I asked you the question, who's the most valuable member of the White Sox? Your answer?
Okay, so if it's going to include defense, I would imagine that because of a couple of errors, Tim Anderson's not going to be on this list to start things. Yoan Moncada's had a little bit of down in him. Jose Abreu's not going to be there either, even though he's been pretty terrific offensively. But first base just isn't a spot where defensively you give your team a whole heck of a lot.
Nor is it a spot where offense has value over replacement.
No, it's not. I think I might know who it is. And I think it might be somebody that a lot of White Sox fans were just absolutely apoplectic about signing this offseason. Is it James McCann?
James McCann, according to Fangraphs, has a wins above replacement of 1.4. Bit of a trick question. That ties him with Tim Anderson.
Oh.
Tim Anderson is also 1.4 wins above replacement. After that, Leury Garcia is worth 0.8 of a win, as is Yoan Moncada, as is Carlos Rodon at 0.8. Jose Abreu is at 0.7. Your top pitcher, most valuable pitcher, is indeed Lucas Giolito. With his ERA of 3.55, a FIP of a sparkling 3.06, and a wins above replacement at 1.1. James McCann and Tim Anderson are at 1.4. Now, McCann's slash line is otherworldly. 382, 421, 607. That's a weighted on base average of 435 and a concurrent WRC plus of 179. That means he is 79% better than an average offensive player. Tim Anderson is at 143. Here's the problem. James McCann's batting average of balls in play is 476.
That's really high. That's incredibly high.
Flashing light for regression. I have not looked at hard hit rates, etc.
I did, actually. I looked this morning. They're up a little bit. So are the medium hit contact rates. They're up a little bit from last season. Not a whole heck of a lot. It's his home run per fly ball rate that's jumped for James McCann. It's not a top 30. It's not a top 50. I don't think it's even in the top 65 in baseball. But it's 16%, which is nice. It's good. It's a lot better than like the 4% he's had for 2 years with the Tigers. It's amazing to me because it's something you got to keep in mind about baseball now. It goes back to a conversation we had with Jed Hoyer during the Scorehouse week, that sample size, as we used to look at it, has changed. What matters and what doesn't, what is a small sample size, that bubble has shrunk some. So if McCann's made big changes, if he's made big adjustments to the swing, if he's like David Bodie or like launch angle type guy, Justin Turner, if he's changed the swing some, maybe that's contributed a little bit. But a .476 batting average on balls in play, that would suggest that he's gotten a little bit lucky en route to having one of the more valuable performances through the first month and a half of the season.
James McCann had something unfortunate happen to him, however, in the game that led to a discussion that I found interesting.
Now that goes off McCann. Oh, goodness. James got hit hard. And he is down. Yep. Upper thigh. That's where it got him. Way upper thigh. Yeah, this is the least comfortable of all the injuries you can have as a catcher. Not good.
They used to, the trainers honestly used to come behind you when that happened and lift you up and down and bounce you on the ground or the plate. I could never understand it because it never seemed to work, but they kept on doing it. Fortunately, now that has gone out of the repertoire.
Yes, geez.
It's horrible.
Yeah, that's not a great idea.
Nope.
So 2-1 off that foul ball. Now 2-2. I mean, look. We advance medically, too. We advance in our technology. The Egyptians used to take people's brains out of their nose. You know, that's not a great idea either.
When they stopped that, a couple years ago?
2 balls and 2 strikes.
All right, a couple things here.
Oh, so many things.
There's a lot going on here.
So many things.
Yes, there's a lot going on. First of all, Steve Stone is right, and I am old enough to have experienced it. It used to be if you either got the wind knocked out of you or you got hit in the scrotal region.
Yeah.
And somebody would cut, a trainer or whomever would cut, you'd lie on your back. They'd come over, they'd lift up your belt and like lift your whole body up and down because that was best practices.
We're not done with that by a large margin. Hold on.
People my age and older and the generation before mine, somebody did this to you. Somebody did this to you when you took like a softball in the guts at camp, or whatever it was. Like, lift him by the belt. Lift him by the belt. Lift him by the waistband. Pick him up and set him down. And I don't know.
Rick, Jay, anything ever seen anything like that?
I remember when Gary Harris, this playoffs, got hit. I don't forget if it was by a person's fist or by a basketball. Jokic was looking at him, and there's video of him telling him to jump up and down. So I wonder if it's the same principle.
Now that you mention that.
Lift
him by the belt. That's what they used to do. You got to back me up on this. Maybe old people, assemble.
I have seen
it's going to take a while.
I didn't know why it was being done. No one's ever said when that happens you do that. But now that you mention that, I have seen that done. And it makes sense. You're sort of shaking them back in place.
Like no, it doesn't
that's
make
not
sense.
The point. They're not out
they're
of
not
place.
Out of whack.
And two,
they're not they're
and
not,
three. We're all good. Okay.
They're not out of play, but that
well, hopefully they're not.
That used to be what was done. And you're screaming in pain, and then there's somebody coming over there and literally grabbing your belt and lifting you up and slamming you up and down on the plate or wherever it was.
That's
what are you doing to me?
Absolutely insane. It is insane. I've never seen that happen.
I'm telling you.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I can't imagine coaches walking over to people, grabbing them and lifting them up by the belt.
This was in the same time where you don't drink water during practice.
Well, that was just dumb.
Oh, you're going to get cramps, son.
Yeah.
You're going to get cramps.
That was really stupid.
Yep. You're going to get and take your salt pills. Make sure you take your salt pills.
Really dumb.
You're losing too much salt. Don't drink water.
because you'll get cramps, but take salt tablets to put all the sodium back in your body. No, it doesn't do anything. None of it does anything. It's all completely wrong and bad.
Upper thigh. That's where it got him. Way upper thigh.
Huh. Yeah, but see, that's not why you called. When you start talking about antiquated medical practices, and you bring up the ancient Egyptians, and he says the ancient Egyptians used to remove people's brains through their noses. And so that doesn't sound like a very good idea. I know he knows this.
Of course he knows this.
It's not a medical practice. They did that. But that was part of something called mummification. The patient was already beyond hope at that point. It wasn't medicine. Now, trephining, if you want to talk about cutting a hole in the skull to release the evil spirits, trephination was a thing in some ancient cultures. And yes, the ancient Egyptians would snake a hook up the nose and pull the brain out. But that was part of mummification. The patient's in another realm.
Is a good mummification.
Yeah. You know what you can use? It'll make you feel a lot better. You got a headache? We're going to mummify you. Get the brain out.
What happened to Tut over there? I got hit the balls. Well, I'm going to take his brain out through his nose.
Yeah, oh, sucks to be Tut. I mean, how'd you
hell
get so funky?
Hell of a pitch framer, though. My God.
Yeah, but let's understand. That is not a medical procedure where at some point the medieval barbers were like, yeah, you know what? Let's not do this anymore because it's not working. No, you were already in the beyond, already headed to wherever you're going, into some other place.
I'm still stuck on the bouncing up and down on home plate thing when you get hit in the old jubilees. I did not think that was going to be part of my education today. I did not know that was something you did.
Here they come, the 815. Yes, I got hit in the balls in Little League, and a coach grabbed my belt and lifted up and down.
Did it help?
No! 6-3-0. I remember getting picked up by the belt and dropped. Said, I'm 28. I played soccer in high school and got hit straight in the nerds with a soccer ball. The coach had me lie on my back and lift my knees toward my chest.
Is it like a pain deferral thing? Like when you have the headache, you squeeze, you know, the meat in between your thumb and your forefinger. We get the headache and you squeeze on the one hand and it's supposed to go away. Like, is it that sort of idea? You know what I'm talking about, right? You get the headache and you're supposed to squeeze in between your thumb and forefinger. And that makes that headache at least dissipate. No? Nothing?
John in Milwaukee.
You don't even know this?
You're on the score. Hi, John.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Happy Monday. Hey, I caught the conversations. I just got in the car. And I remember that. I'm 55. You get hit there, and every now and then, if you got the wind knocked out of you, they'd always lift me by the belt when I was younger. And I don't know what that did, but it did seem to help.
But
it doesn't.
It seemed to, apparently.
Well, you know what I mean?
There you go.
I love that you said olds assemble, and it did take 7 or 8 minutes for everybody to come.
Assembling's not easy here.
I can't see my phone.
Hold on a second.
Where is the number?
Have you seen the video of kids trying to figure out how to use a rotary phone?
Oh, it's fantastic.
And it's depressing all at the same time.
Oh, it really is. Just a bunch of idiots looking at it. I think they took the handset and slapped the thing around a little while. I mean, they just couldn't figure the damn thing out at all. See, I'm getting backed up on the headache cure. You squeeze in right here. See? Look. Right there. And then makes the headache go away between your thumb and forefinger.
What?
Yeah, you just squeeze right here. It makes the headache go away.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does. It can sometimes. All right, it doesn't work all that often, but it's something people do.
Like, what they claim, pressure point or something like
yeah,
that?
Like being bounced up and down on home plate when you hit the newts.
No, I don't think it's that. I think they actually thought it was something and they didn't realize it was wrong, just like we weren't supposed to have water during practice. I'm sorry. What do you think? Let me ask you this question.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think Lucas Giolito's average fastball velocity sits vis-a-vis his career numbers or any other single season?
I would bet it's up. Oh, but the average velocity is up. I would bet it's something like 93, maybe even 93.5.
It's more than that.
How much?
It is most definitely up. Lucas Giolito is throwing his fastball at 93.5.
Okay.
Okay? That sound good to you?
Yeah, it works.
He was at 94.2 for a while. He's at 93. I believe in last game he was averaging around 94. But he's getting it back, which is really what's interesting. He's actually starting to get it back a little bit because he's actually
higher. His average fastball is faster than it was with the Nationals in 2016. So something about what he's doing, and I don't know, we could talk to him about it, but I don't know if this is Rapsodo Edgertronic stuff.
Well, he's got the revamped delivery. You know, I mean, he's simplified things. He's more straight up and down. The arm swing is different, and that seemed to increase his accuracy by quite a bit. I mean, other than Tyler Chatwood, it was Lucas Giolito with the highest walk rate in baseball last year for qualified starters. So to go from that guy to a totally different delivery, and you know what impressed me most in his last start was, you know, the one prior was fastball change, right? He and McCann worked really well together, finding out how to get swings and misses with that fastball.
But the Blue Jays jumped on fastball change.
Yeah, they did. And then they changed the approach. He lasted seven. He was able to get that slider working in really well. And I think I've said this with Carlos Rodon a little bit too. I think what's really impressive are bounce back starts, adjustment type starts, where maybe you do get touched a little bit and your first game plan isn't working. This is what, you know, Kyle Hendricks had talked about quite a bit, and what Joe Sheehan had talked about with Kyle in regards to Kyle Hendricks is this idea that, can you adapt in start? You know, what do you do to change after you found out what the opponent's strategy is against you, how they're trying to hit you?
What we heard about Kyle Hendricks was that he doesn't, that he does his work in between starts and is not an in-game adapter.
Yeah, Sahad have talked a little bit about that with us, and so had Sheehan. With Giolito in his last start, you could see him have to adapt it in-game. And sure, it's the Blue Jays, but that's a guy who has clearly been able to win a mental game his last couple of starts. And if, you know, you mentioned that James McCann has been one of the most important White Sox, at least in terms of wins above replacement, at 1.4
valuable. I literally use the term valuable because he and Tim Anderson are the most valuable players.
Which matters. And, you know, you listen to the way that Giolito talks about working with James McCann. And I'm one that buys into pitcher-catcher relationships. I am. Always have been. If it's, whether it's a caddy or whether it's, whether it's an everyday type guy that's able to work out a relationship between the pitcher, his day-to-day stuff, and then the game plan for an offense, I think that matters. You know, and I think more and more teams have gone to find defensive-oriented catchers who can work that part of it, where the offense is just a little bit of a bonus, because you see how important it is to get those extra strikes, to get that pitcher deeper into a ball game, or that reliever out of a tighter jam, whatever it happens to be. I'm really intrigued by the battery that the White Sox have created. And if, you know, as much crap, and you put me at the top of the list, as much crap as people gave the White Sox for signing James McCann to begin with, if he's at, the offense is the offense, and if it keeps up to, I don't know, 50% of what he's been up to, that's great. But if he's able to work with Giolito and Ronaldo Lopez to the levels that they talk about him working, then that's a huge part of this rebuild, kind of not checked off the list, but certainly put on more solid ground than it had been with Omar Narvaez behind the plate, who is just an adventure back there.
That's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. We are Bernstein and McKnight here on Sports Radio 670, Monday through Friday from 9 to noon. The Cubs are in first place. They are now two games up. They have the day off today. The White Sox are playing the Indians again?
Yeah.
They've played the Indians like every other series, haven't
they? They've got the opposite of the Cubs-Cardinals schedule, where they face each other a couple of times at the beginning and then seven times in the last week and a half.
It'll be Ronaldo Lopez to see if he can keep things going for them. We also have a shot for you to win $1,000 cash with a lucky text keyword. We should also examine some of what Bulls owner Michael Reinsdorf said earlier today on these airwaves with Mully and Haw. A couple of eyebrow raisers in there as we get set for the big draft lottery. When you're a Bulls fan, you can't look forward to
draft lottery
finals games anymore. You look forward to the draft lottery. It's tomorrow night, and that was among the things that were discussed. So we'll break some of that down next on The Score.
The 3-1. Swung on and drilled in the air. Left center field and deep. It's got a chance. Home run. Chris Bryant with a two-run homer. A rocket into the wind. And the Cubs now lead 4-1.
He looks really sharp. His confidence is way up. He played a great first base, too. That play where he turned a double play, really smart. That one ball was hit hard that he had to pick to his side. He got sideways, which was the right thing to do on that. Just playing with a lot of confidence right now. He's playing everywhere.
Joe Maddon and Chris Bryant told you to buy stock in Chris Bryant offense. The numbers were off the charts. The regression to his BABIP, to his hard hit rate, when you saw what was actually going on, when you saw the number of balls that were hit over 100 miles an hour that were turning into outs, usually those are not outs when you hit enough of them. And he is meeting the ball out front. He is continuing to drive it. And it looks like the Chris Bryant you know and love is back. The bottom of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats playoff hockey, and the Chicago Wolves are up 3-2 over Iowa in the division finals. The Wolves return home tonight at 7 for clinching Game 6 at Allstate Arena. Tickets start at only $15. Visit ChicagoWolves.com.
5 homers in his last 8, 5 in his 11 from May 1st. He's been one hell of a player. He's walked 13 times to 7 strikeouts, too, so far this month. And I was thinking about something, too, as Joe kind of characterized the absence of Anthony Rizzo from the lineup last night's game. You know, he's got the back thing that pops up, like it always does for Rizzo. You know, cold weather hits, and maybe it's a little unseasonable one day here or there, and it locks up on him. And while that sucks, I kind of realized that I don't have a lot of panic about Anthony Rizzo right now. Because it's just kind of, for me, baked in to the whole discussion about what this Cubs offense is and how the lineup has worked the last 4 or 5 years. What's really comfortable about all this is that Javi Baez continues to hit, Wilson Contreras has continued to hit, and Chris Bryant has come on in the last 10, 11 games. So hopefully, you know, a little bit unlike last season, really how it felt last season, you know, Rizzo's out, and you kind of scuffle a little bit to get going. Most of it was the pitching last year, although it just felt like, boy, more where are the runs and keep up. This is something that a Cubs offense right now, as weird as it sounds, with as many injuries as they've had to get around, this is something a Cubs offense right now, at least in the short term, can handle and deal with.
Yeah, have you noticed something who's been bad lately? Hayward.
Yeah, Hayward's not been super. Had one good hit, one well-timed hit, and otherwise really long and bad day.
Yeah, but he's really gone down ever since he had that hot start that was covering for everybody else. It timed up nicely. You got some guys rising to the occasion, some guys carrying you a little bit. You know, obviously Baez has been just a nonstop. And, you know, Schwarber has got to start barreling up some balls.
Yeah, he does. Why? They continue to walk Kyle Schwarber, though. He had the day with 4 walks on, what was that, Saturday?
I don't know what they're afraid of.
I'm not really sure either. Maybe it's just a handedness thing. You want Taylor Davis up. You know, that happened already last week. You've had another spot or two where he's come up, and they've intentionally blocked him, and you get a piece there. I don't know why specifically NL Central opponents continue to treat him, or in some instances treat him like he's Kyle Schwarber 2016. Or Kyle Schwarber 2015, for that damn matter.
His WRC plus is 91. He's not even at the break even. 100
for,
is
for
average.
A left fielder whose job is to hit and be, you know, passable on defense.
Yes. It's not there.
It's tough.
The slugging component, the on base is great. Got 350 on base. Terrific. But a lot of that is still based on residual fear, like you say.
Some of it feels that way, or the rest of the lineup. And maybe that's where Joe kind of buys into some protection aspects of who you hit and where you hit them. It's interesting, and it's a lot more fun to take a look at where, at least I've come to with Anthony Rizzo, and just kind of understand that second half and that heat up kind of thing for Rizzo, even though it was happening a little bit prior to the back injury, that's just all kind of comfortable now. And it's kind of strange, or maybe it's comforting, that a player like that has earned that kind of, you know, check, that kind of tip of the cap. Like, all right, he's going to have his thing at some point. He's going to have that slow start. But you know he'll be back to it.
Right.
And as a left-handed, you know, slugging first baseman, profiles that, you know, kind of drop off in years future, guy that I wouldn't necessarily line up to pay through his 30s, as important as he's been with this team, and as much as his contract status is very well known, just a couple of years left for very little money, I don't know that I'm jumping at it to go ahead and get that thing extended. I don't think that'd be the financially responsible thing to do, even if that guy's been the heartbeat of a team for a little while.
I know I mentioned that there was some Bulls stuff we're going to get to. I think we'll be Bulls intensive more tomorrow, especially with the Cup today and the lottery coming up tomorrow evening, the big
right.
day. So I think it'd be probably better off if we dive into that. We got some Cubs stuff here. Don't look now, by the way. You know, last year when John Lester had that great stretch, he was winning a bunch of games, and we kept saying, yeah, but the peripherals. But the peripherals. Everything else showing he's really not as good as some of these outcomes have been. We looked at all the hard hit balls against him. Check this out, though.
Okay.
If you want to know, if you're asking this question, is Lester real? John Lester's ERA is 1.16. His fielder independent pitching,
yeah,
is 2.72.
That's workable.
That's better than workable.
Yeah, you can live with that.
Sure, maybe he's pitched a little bit better. And for whatever reason, he's one of these guys that does outpitch his peripherals. But I'll be damned if he hasn't started getting back to whatever it's been.
As much crap as we gave the ESPN Sunday Night broadcast to start the show, and that is where things
deserved.
Started for us.
It sucks.
It's well-deserved, but it doesn't mean that they can't point a few things out every now and again.
Well, there's enough words that eventually you'll be able to pull them together to find something.
It's like a bunch of chimpanzees typing, and eventually you come out with Shakespeare, that kind of thing. I don't know if it's that bad, but you've got, and John said this too, it's the backdoor cutter to right-handers that's worked incredibly well for him this season. I don't know if it's a little bit of a different grip. I don't think he'd ever tell you, but I'd love to know if some of the kind of track stuff got a hold of just exactly how to grip that pitch or change things a little bit differently, whether that was gotten to him by Tommy Hotovy or by himself or by a catcher or Borzello who noticed it. But it's that pitch, especially last night in his start prior, that really helped him get called strikes, and not just third strikes. I mean, like, you know, getting ahead, having that kind of pound it cutter that really worked out for him well. It seems a bit of a different Lester, and we've always wondered whether or not that different kind of guy was going to show up with more and more high fastballs being thrown in this game of baseball. He's adapted this way. I don't know that a lot of other guys could do that with the stuff he's got.
They can't, is the answer.
Not a lot.
No. There's a special level of guile that's involved there.
And trust, too. I mean, you saw Joe leave him out there for as many pitches as he has. Now, in the last two of the last three starts, you've seen him ask for that extra hitter, two, three in a game because of where the bullpen's been at. This team has gotten by without its closer, and now its substitute closer for a couple of games now, and will have to do it for another week or so at least. I mean, you're missing a lot of outs in the back of the pen, which means you stress and lean more than ever on a rotation that was put together to go into the sixth and into the seventh. They've been able to do it for you.
I would like to think that this Lester is sustainable. I don't. He's going to have a bad day out there. He's going to have one of his hard hit days.
Yeah.
He's going to have one of his leave the ball up there days, and then the numbers might regress a little bit. But to see him doing this without a lot of defensive help from his catcher is a good sign. In Hammond, it is Xavier on the score.
How you doing, guys?
What's up?
Hey, with the team heading to Cincinnati, I have a question. You know, we were just talking about Schwarber. Schwarber's struggling and Hayward coming back down to earth. How is Ian Happ doing? I mean, is it time maybe to see if he comes back and starts hitting again or starts hitting? At least he's going to Cincinnati.
Yeah, David, it's an interesting question. I thought it was probably going to be one that was asked when Addison Russell came up because their numbers were pretty similar. They were both hitting about 250 at the time. They both had an on base about 100% higher than that, or 100 points higher than that. And some okay slugging numbers from Happ and some not some great slugging numbers from Russell when he came up. And the discussion was kind of an interesting one to have about Happ. But I really get the sense that Happ's work, or at least, you know, given some of the roster moves that they've made lately, Happ's work in AAA is kind of the long-term variety.
Aren't we thinking that now?
Yeah, it seems that way.
His numbers.
Might be.
Yeah, his number. I mean, here's his numbers.
Scout the slash line,
right?
Ever. Never do this, but you asked what his numbers were, so we'll give you the numbers.
Here you go. 240 average, on base 369. His OPS is 757, four home runs, 21 RBIs, struck out 34 times.
So, Ian Happ. And I mean, Ian Happ.
Right?
I mean, that's kind of what his profile was. I find him interesting. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he's back up somewhere around trade deadline time, just because that's when things like that happen. Like, more injuries could happen too, but it feels to me like the work he's got to do is the long-term variety.
He got messed up last year. Chili Davis did not help him. I hate the fact that his value has taken a real hit. He's going to end up being your Chili Davis experiment casualty.
I don't know if I'd say casualty. He's still young. He's still fairly athletic. And he's
but with every day he's down there, he loses value.
Well, yeah, that's true. But, I mean, you've got a game now that's throwing as many high fastballs as they can possibly. I mean, when you're getting them, they're up in the strike zone. That happens to be his weakness. You know, that happens to be one thing where he swings at it a ton and doesn't hit it much. He's like a Babe Ruth player. You know, I mean, it's like Babe Ruth, the Little Leagues, not actually like Babe Ruth
level.
Yeah, Babe Ruth
not,
level.
Not
player.
Actual Babe Ruth
no,
player.
No, like a pony ball player, like a 13-year-old who sees a high. He was like me when I was 13, okay? He's a lot of high fastballs and couldn't lay off the damn thing. And you don't hit it. Some guys have changed the swing around enough to make contact there. And it doesn't seem that he's been able to. Well, I think that's the ask when they sent them down to AAA.
It's the fact that the Cubs have snapped back to be a first-place team and the fact that we don't have to think about Ian Happ is the best thing that you can have happen, that he can be about his work and get back to being who he is. The problem is when somebody like C.J. Edwards goes down, it's like, oh, okay, I got it. I'm back. I'm good. It makes you think that there's some sort of panacea, that there's some sort of Des Moines cure-all, that they dip him in a fountain and everything is just better. But it's really not the case, especially for a hitter that has as much going on in his head as Happ does.
Well, and you know that's not the case. I mean, if you're a Cub fan, you've seen Kyle Schwarber go down, come back, and not a whole lot has changed, at least production-wise, except for the batting stance. That's changed quite a bit. You know, this isn't the first celebrated guy that they've taken another wash through AAA. I mean, this has happened before, and you've not really netted the benefits, at least from the hitting side.
Who's gotten repaired? Because Schwarber was sort of noted as the guy who was repaired by the AAA move, and now he's just kind of Sheehan's right about him, man.
He could be.
He's just a guy.
He really could be. He really could be. I mean, it's finding a platoon matchup that's mandatory now for at least from my perspective, for both he and to a lesser degree Almora. But then that leaves you kind of stuck in the outfield. That leaves you kind of stuck defensively. And that's not what Joe Maddon wants to be. He wants to be as versatile as he can be.
Guess what we have for you in just a moment.
What's that?
Take a guess. $1,000 in cash,
that's
possibly.
A lot of money.
It is. It's a lot of money, and I'm going to see if I can find an unintended homophone for whatever the keyword is, because that's
I would not bet against
that's
you.
The case. I haven't looked at it yet, and I'm not sure if I can find one, but that has been my quest. And then after that, we're going to say good afternoon to Lawrence Holmes here on Sports Radio 670 The Score. It is time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on The Score. This hour's keyword is love. That's all I got. Text love to 72881.
That's all you need.
By the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is love to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. Thanks to Joe O for the updates. Thanks to Zawoski, Camp, Diaz, and Gertz for all of their production help. Tomorrow, Joe Sheehan is
Joe
going
Day.
To join us at 10. It's Joe Day. Oh, sorry, Tuesday's Joe Day.
Joe Sheehan, Joe Maddon.
Sheehan at 10, Joe Maddon at noon, and Richard Deitch of The Athletic. And Toronto Radio is going to talk media with us tomorrow. Not just NBA ratings and all that, but a lot about what we were discussing regarding the ESPN baseball broadcast, how to fix it, what to do about it, how to rein it in and fix the soup. We need Linguini and Remy over there. We're fixing the soup
whole
for
bunch
us
of everything.
Before they serve it to Anton
I think they
Ego.
Need to stop making soup.
Because
I think they need to go to something else.
That is overcooked, over-seasoned soup is what that is. And we've got Lawrence Holmes ready to join our sports buffet coming up next on The Score.